This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And they're shaping the rules in their favor. And they're doing so at the expense of ordinary people, and that in turn is fueling inequality within and between countries.
That was Nabil Ahmed, Oxfam America's Director of Economic and Racial Justice, on the global oligarchy of the super rich who exert control over the global economy. Details coming up. Also, public health experts and world leaders say more needs to be done to contain the Mpox outbreak. And U.S. Africa Command is working with Southern African countries to combat gender-based violence. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. The gathering of world leaders for the United Nations General Assembly continues today in New York. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir tells VOA's Carol Van Damme that a key focus yesterday was the speech by Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky and his appeal for help as his country battles the invasion by Russian forces.
She also... On Wednesday, it was a lot about Ukraine. We heard the speech from President Volodymyr Zelensky. He really appealed for international solidarity for his country. He said Russia hasn't been able to defeat them on the battlefield yet, so now they're trying to break their spirit. And one of the ways they're doing it is by trying to destroy Ukraine's power grid ahead of the winter. And as you know, it's really brutally cold in Ukraine in the winter. And he said 80% of the country's power has been knocked out. So he was appealing for, of course, more military support. And he's gone down to Washington, D.C. today to see President Biden to discuss what he's calling his victory plan for Ukraine. And then on another front, we had a lot of talk about the escalation from Gaza over the border of Israel into Lebanon. You know, it's been really hot in the last week or so. There have been a lot of Israeli airstrikes against Hezbollah, against targets of Hezbollah militants who are based in Lebanon, and rockets fired from Hezbollah militant bases in Lebanon into northern Israel. And the Israelis are fed up, and the prime minister says he wants the 60 or 70,000 Israelis who've been displaced from their homes in the north to be able to go back home. And so he's really kind of turned his attention away from Gaza in the last couple of weeks and put it on Lebanon. And the prime minister of Lebanon flew into New York. He was not expected here. He flew in for an emergency meeting last night of the UN Security Council. And the French foreign minister announced that the US and France have been working on a 21-day ceasefire truce for Lebanon and Israel to try and calm tensions down with Hezbollah.
What's on tap for today as far as the speeches go?
Well, in a few minutes, we'll be hearing from Kenyan President Ruto. We're also going to hear today from General Burhan from Sudan. He's also scheduled to give a press conference later today, so that should be interesting. We're hearing that the SAF, there's some major fighting going on in Khartoum today, so we should get some updates perhaps from him about it. So I'll be listening for those two in particular. And we'll also be hearing from the Haitian Prime Minister, I believe, and that will be interesting for us because Kenya, you know, is leading this multinational force in Haiti that's trying to subdue the gangs that are causing all sorts of violence and suffering in Haiti. So it'll be interesting to hear from the Prime Minister of Haiti about how that's going, and also from President Ruto about whether Kenya will be staying or sending more troops and what his plans are in terms of helping Haiti.
And would you say that there are some overriding themes at the General Assembly besides, of course, the Ukraine-Russia war and the Gaza-Israel-Hamas war? Are there other things that keep coming up?
Yeah, you know, those two conflicts are really, really drawing a lot of the attention, a lot of the energy. The diplomats are really scrambling, especially now on the Lebanese issue. Sudan, though, is getting a lot of attention. We had a big humanitarian event about it. There were new announcements made on Wednesday. Actually, the U.S. announced $424 million for the humanitarian response for Sudan and the neighboring countries that are hosting refugees and returnees. The European Union announced 69 million euros, and the UN said they'd be giving $25 million from their emergency relief fund. So there's a big push to try and fund humanitarian efforts for Sudan. And there's also equally a push on the political and security front to try and get the generals to step back.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from New York. The UN General Assembly continues through Monday, and you can find all our coverage on voaafrica.com, voanews.com, and our VOA Africa social media. As world leaders gather for the annual United Nations General Assembly in New York this week, the charity Oxfam says they are being undermined by what it calls a global oligarchy of the super rich who exert control over the global economy. The organization accuses them of exacerbating problems like extreme inequality and climate change. Henry Ridgewell reports.
The United Nations General Assembly aims to provide an equal platform for leaders to discuss the most pressing world issues like poverty and climate change. But a new report from the charity Oxfam says the annual meeting is overshadowed by what it terms a global oligarchy controlled by the ultra-rich and mega corporations. Nabil Ahmed is Oxfam America's Director of Economic and Racial Justice.
And they're shaping the rules in their favour. And they're doing so at the expense of ordinary people, and that in turn is fueling inequality within and between countries.
Oxfam says we are living in an age of extreme global inequality, where the world's richest 1% own more wealth than 95% of the rest of humanity. Again, Nabil Ahmed.
We live in a world in which mega corporations, you know, so many of them are paying little to no tax, basically.
Brazil, which currently holds the presidency of the G20, wants to impose a 2% minimum tax on the world's richest billionaires, which it claims would raise up to $250 billion, a move backed by Oxfam and many other NGOs. The plan is backed by other members, including South Africa, Spain and France. But US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen spoke against the move at a G20 meeting in July.
Tax policy is very difficult to coordinate globally, and we don't see a need or really think it's desirable to try to negotiate a global agreement on that. We think that all countries should make sure that their taxation systems are fair and progressive.
Oxfam says tax revenues in the global south, meanwhile, are increasingly spent on servicing debt to private creditors like banks and hedge funds. The charity also accuses large pharmaceutical companies of shaping rules over intellectual property rights to benefit their shareholders. Oxfam says this meant poorer nations struggled to access coronavirus vaccines, even though billions in government funding went to developing them. Again, Nabil Ahmed.
That's the money that, you know, we put into our tax systems to be able to get there. In fact, decades of investment went into getting mRNA in the first place.
Responding to VOA, Pfizer said the company had offered its coronavirus vaccine at cost price to poorer nations, but that many richer countries moved faster to purchase the available doses. Pfizer's chairman also warned that losing intellectual property rights would disincentivize anyone else from taking a big financial risk in developing such vaccines, a view echoed by other large pharmaceutical giants. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And we would love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202-258-3076, +1 202-258-3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. As cases of mpox continue to rise across the African continent, public health experts and world leaders are sounding the alarm and say more needs to be done to contain the viral outbreak. So far, 15 African countries are affected. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo looks at the latest figures as Kenya's health ministry just confirmed two more cases, bringing the number in the country to 7.
While the number of confirmed mpox cases in countries like Kenya is low at 7 reported cases, the same can't be said about other nations. So far, 15 countries in Africa are assessed as having active outbreaks of mpox, including the latest to report a case, Morocco. Samuel Boland is the mpox incident manager for the World Health Organization Regional Office for Africa. He says that while the Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi account for almost 90% of confirmed cases, more instances are popping up in other countries. He spoke with VOA from Brazzaville in the Republic of Congo.
DRC and Burundi especially affected, but also Cameroon, Central African Republic, Nigeria, Cote d'Ivoire, Republic of Congo, Liberia, Uganda, Kenya, Gabon, Rwanda, South Africa, and Guinea.
The WHO says two distinct clades or strains have been identified. They are clade 1, formerly known as the Congo Basin clade, and clade 2, the former West African clade. Formerly known as monkeypox, the viral disease can spread between people through close contact, according to the World Health Organization, and occasionally via objects and areas that have been touched by a person with mpox. Signs and symptoms include fever, rash, and swollen lymph nodes. Boland says that so far this year, there have been 6,580 confirmed cases, but there is a bigger number of suspected cases, meaning the ones that meet the case definition and are clinically compatible with mpox, but may or may not have been tested due to various limitations in several countries. That number has climbed to nearly 32,000.
Now, amongst that larger number of suspected cases, 844 people have died, but when focusing on the confirmed cases, this year, as in from the 1st of January, 32 people have unfortunately passed away.
In a virtual briefing last week, Jean Kaseya, Director General of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, says mpox is not under control in Africa. He says that while vaccine donations are trickling in, the amount is insufficient to contain this outbreak, a view echoed by Boland.
Today, we have almost around 4 million commitment of doses. 4 million doses as commitment. But we say we need more.
In an address to world leaders at the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday, U.S. President Joe Biden highlighted the need to move quickly to confront the mpox outbreak in Africa.
We're prepared to commit $500 million to help African countries prevent and respond to mpox and to donate 1 million doses of mpox vaccine. Now,
no specific date was given as to when all the vaccines will arrive in Africa, but Biden says these investments will be delivered bilaterally through existing relationships with partner countries, as well as through multilateral institutions. In addition to vaccines, Boland says this mpox outbreak requires interventions across the full spectrum of the public health sector. He says the world needs to scale up and make sure it can deliver in several areas.
Things like surveillance, which would include case investigation and contact tracing, both going out into communities and looking for cases and also encouraging and working with communities to report cases when people become unwell.
He also says this approach includes infection prevention and control, case management, and vaccination. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. Africa Command, or AFRICOM, is working with southern African countries to combat gender-based violence in the military. This week, AFRICOM and regional military officials are holding a series of workshops in Zambia to strengthen regional collaboration in the fight against workplace harassment. From Habrone, Mokandisi Dube reports.
AFRICOM and its component, the U.S. Air Forces in Europe and Air Forces Africa, or USAF of Africa, have united with the Zambia Defense Force to foster strategies to tackle gender-based violence in the region. Botswana and Zambia are participating in efforts to strengthen regional initiatives against sexual assault. Lieutenant Colonel Linda Jones is the USAF of Africa Chief for African Health Engagements. She calls it imperative to come up with strategies to fight gender-based violence in the armed forces.
It is the responsibility of leaders at all levels to set the tone and create an environment where everyone is valued and empowered to speak up against misconduct. This involves not only enforcing policies, but also modeling respectful behavior and actively supporting those who report incidents.
In 2021, U.S. Defense Department officials reported sexual violence had reached the highest level ever reported, with 8.4% of women assaulted on duty. U.S. Air Force Tech Sergeant Samara Brown says if left unchecked, gender-based violence can affect execution of military tasks.
Gender-based violence undermines the core values of any military organization. It erodes trust, disrupts unit cohesion, and ultimately compromises mission readiness. We must take a firm stand against it, not just a matter of policy, but as a commitment to uphold the principles of honor, integrity, and respect that define our service.
Retired U.S. Air Force official and workplace development consultant Keith Castile facilitated the Lusaka workshop. He says such collaborations with the Zambia Defense Force can ensure gender-based violence is addressed within regional militaries.
No military can tackle this issue alone. By sharing knowledge and collaborating across branches and communities, we can develop more effective strategies to combat gender-based violence. Engaging in open dialogue, facilitating workshops, and creating joint initiatives will enable us to learn from one another and strengthen our collective efforts.
Attending the workshop in Lusaka, Zambia Defense Force Major Stephen Muleya said the military workplace must be free of gender-based harassment.
When individuals know that they can perform their duties without the threat of harassment or violence, they are more likely to focus fully on their missions. We must actively cultivate an atmosphere where everyone can thrive, free from fear and intimidation.
Zambian officials say they are planning to open a regional office for innovative gender-based violence solutions. Zambian Air Force legal advisor Major Glory Musonda says collaboration with U.S. partners should result in solutions to gender-based violence within the force.
We all have a responsibility to build military environments where respect and dignity are upheld. It's not enough to simply acknowledge the issue. We must actively work towards solutions that ensure the safety and well-being of every service member.
Meanwhile, officials representing the U.S. Army War College are in Lusaka for discussions on women, peace and security, which aligns with efforts to address gender-based violence in the region. Mqondisi Dube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Early voting for the presidential election in the state of Georgia begins October 15th. Polls show a close contest there between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. VOA's Kane Fabo has more from Atlanta.
Georgia Governor Brian Kemp and vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance shared the stage at a recent dinner, a show of Republican Party unity, after years of discord between Kemp and former President Donald Trump.
We're finna start all over.
Atlanta voter Dorothy Harp is not concerned about Trump's feud with Kemp over the 2020 election, which Trump falsely says he won in Georgia. She's more concerned about the economy.
We had lower prices on our food, gas, energy. Because everything was better under the Trump administration.
It's a message Harp takes door to door, encouraging members of her community to vote.
And I've got a lot of young voters who said they're going to vote for Trump.
In the 2020 election, Joe Biden defeated Trump in Georgia by just over 11,000 votes out of nearly 5 million cast. Numbers Georgia's Republican Governor Kemp knows well, as he implored audience members, including Harp, to vote.
So we cannot take anything for granted. We cannot take our foot off the gas.
Georgia is fully in play again.
Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens, a Democrat, says polls show another close race this year between Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris.
People sometimes get disenfranchised by thinking that their vote doesn't matter, but we have to go out there and make sure everyone knows that their vote does matter.
Listen, every vote counts.
Elijah Grace is with the voter advocacy organization, the New Georgia Project Action Fund, whose workers go door to door to promote voter registration.
We specialize in targeting black and brown people across the state, making sure that they have all the resources that needed to cast their ballot.
A 2020 Pew Research study showed Georgia's eligible black voting population made up a third of the state's total electorate. Exit polls in 2020 showed 88% of black voters chose Biden. But recent polls show Democrats losing ground in this close contest.
Both sides understand that Rose lead through Georgia.
When the race was between Biden and Trump, Grace noticed a lack of enthusiasm among potential voters.
And since the Democratic ticket has changed, we have seen a strong uptick in support for Vice President Kamala Harris.
She's at the intersection of color and gender.
Bernice King, daughter of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., believes Harris appeals to voters previously considering sitting on the sidelines.
Frankly, just speaking as a woman, you know, I think this is a season where we're seeing more and more women emerge in the critical places of leadership.
Leadership is motivating Harp to back Trump, and she's working to bring others along with her as Republicans focus on inflation and... Polls open in Georgia for early voting on October 15th. Kane Faerbaugh, VOA News, Atlanta.
Eswatini's main opposition party claims its leader was poisoned, putting renewed scrutiny on one of the last remaining absolute monarchies, where authorities have for years moved to quash pro-democracy movements. The People's United Democratic Movement Party said its president, Molungisi Makanya, was hospitalized after being poisoned in neighboring South Africa on Tuesday. It gave no more detail on his condition or the circumstances of the alleged poisoning. Makanya had recently said there would be new pro-democracy protests in Eswatini next month. Eswatini government spokesperson Elfayas Nkas Umalo denied any involvement. Benin's prosecutors said yesterday that three prominent men, including a presidential guard commander, have been arrested on suspicion of planning a coup d'etat in the small West African nation. The other two accused of attempting the coup are a former sports minister and a businessman close to President Patrice Talon. Ilonim Mario Mitunu, the special prosecutor at Benin's Court for Financial Crimes and Terrorism, said the alleged coup was planned to take place on Friday.
Hello, I'm Vincent McCory, managing editor of Africa 54 TV show. The war in Ukraine, Sudan's humanitarian crisis, and an escalation between Israel and Hezbollah dominated the second day of the United Nations General Assembly meetings. We have more from New York. For this and more, tune in on your local TV station at 1630 UTC.
Join us for an exclusive Voice of America town hall as we explore the power of the African diaspora vote. From policy impact to voting rights, hear from our guests from the United States and Africa shaping this vital movement. Together, we can make our voices heard. Tune in Wednesday, October the 16th at 1830 UTC. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Douglas Mpuga, and our engineer, Adrias Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.